and welcome to the Medicine Box on CNBCTV18.com with me, your host, Ekta Batra. This podcast aims to give you an insight on all things pharma and health, from discussing trends in the industry to key issues in health with all the relevant experts. And this series of the Medicine Box is focused on health, nutrition, and wellness. Our guest on today's podcast is Luke Cotino. Luke is a holistic lifestyle coach in the field of integrative and lifestyle medicine. He's the author of three books, which includes The Great Indian Diet with Shilpa Shetty and his latest book, The Dry Fasting Miracle, From Deprived to Thrive. Luke has co-founded Reset, a facility which is focused on health and wellness, and has begun the Get Health India campaign, a free platform to create awareness on health and wellness. A part of Luke's work comprises of caring for patients with cancer, providing patients with health and nutrition programs in order to reduce suffering and disease.
Hi Luke, welcome to the podcast. Let's start with a brief background about yourself. Tell me how you got into nutrition and wellness and what is it that you exactly do?
Okay. I studied in Goa and I was in Xavier's doing my arts. I finished my science. I majored in science, and then my dad asked me what I wanted to do, and then I thought hotel management would be great because my friend's dad, he was the general manager at Taj, and we would like be every weekend at the Taj availing all the free benefits, and I thought, oh wow, this is cool, let me become the general manager of a hotel. So he paid a high fee for me to get into IHM, and I hated it on day one. And I was like, how do I get through, 3 years of this? But it was one subject, food science, technology, and nutrition. And that one subject caught my heart, and I loved it. I finished my 3 years. I went on to study further. I went, I started traveling and, doing different jobs in London, the UK, Dubai, Qatar. But I always kept studying because health always fascinated me. Whether it was anatomy, whether it was nutrition. And then I had a 10-year stint at IBM where I would lead operations, and I was also into integrated health services. And I started noticing that the top management, they would have all these fancy lives of traveling all over the world and earn fancy packages, but they were losing their health. They were always in and out of hospitals, diabetes. And I tried to identify this gap, and it very clearly showed that they lacked lifestyle, nothing else. Their sleep habits, their eating habits, absolutely zero exercise. And there was no one to tell them that, hey, this is important. We had reached a stage in India where everyone was dependent on a pill. Acidity, pop a pill. Sleep, pop a pill. Everything was pill dependent, and people were getting sicker and sicker. So I said, let me explore this new field of lifestyle medicine. Now, when I say lifestyle medicine, it's also called integrative and lifestyle medicine, where we're not the kind of people who are against doctors. In fact, in our team, we have doctors. We have allopathic doctors. We have surgeons. We have oncologists. But they understand lifestyle. So medicine is great, but we also need lifestyle. And that's the reason the country is becoming sicker and sicker. We're now the diabetic capital of the world. And it's shameful, considering we have fancy hospitals, we have doctors, we have nutritionists, we have more gyms, we have everything around. But then the question is, why are we getting sicker? Because we become...
So why are we getting sicker?
It's very simple. One is lifestyle, but no one's talking about lifestyle. The moment someone's sick, we're putting them on more and more medication, and people are in belief that the medication is going to heal them, but the medication never heals you. It just treats the symptom. So it's great. You need it to treat your symptom, but parallelly, you need to change your lifestyle. So if the reason I've got diabetes today, for example, is because I'm sedentary and I'm eating too many carbohydrates, how will a pill ever solve my problem unless I also work with that? So the pill may bring down my sugar levels on paper, which is not good enough for the human body. It's only suppression. It's good for your health, but it isn't good for your overall, we all know the connection of people on diabetic medication with eventual high blood pressure, cardiovascular disease, and even chronic kidney disease. We're seeing that whole trend today. But now if I make that change and I start being a little more active and start making small minor changes in my diet, no fat diets required. If I'm eating too many carbs, I just got to reduce that. It's common sense, and that is what lifestyle is. So we're actually trying to tell people, breathe more.
But have you seen the kind of incidence of higher diabetes, higher obesity in your practice in the past couple of years rise significantly as compared to before?
Oh, absolutely.
India?
Absolutely. We've seen cardiovascular diseases, obesity, diabetes, and cancer. Cancer has become like an epidemic right now. It's on the rise, and we're sitting with so much of data which we can see that people are not changing their lifestyle. They're going through chemo session after chemo session, but they're not changing their environment around them, the way they eat, the way they sleep. Like, look at the amount of Alzheimer's happening today and dementia. Everyone's worried about it. Everyone's searching for that perfect drug. But no one's looking at why is Alzheimer's happening. And the first connection, the first medical connection is sleep deprivation over the years. Alzheimer's just doesn't happen. You just don't wake up with it. It's happening already. It's happening in our life now if it's going to manifest itself 10 to 15 years down the line. So, you know, we've lost focus on prevention. Everyone's talking about genetic testing and what we should do. We're very good at telling people how sick you are and what's wrong with you. But no one's focused on prevention. What are the things that we can do that can actually help us prevent disease? You know, and that's our focus.
Well, I'm going to get to prevention in just a bit. But how much of this is actually linked to stress and a high multitasking kind of lifestyle that Indians have started living?
A lot of it. I would say most of it. Because, see, we can't really say stress causes disease, but I can say stress causes inflammation and inflammation causes disease. So look at cardiovascular. What is it? It's an inflammatory disease. Look at cancer. What is it? It's an inflammatory disease. Diabetes, inflammatory disease. Alzheimer's, inflammatory disease. Obesity, inflammatory disease. Inflammation is the root cause, and inflammation is caused by various factors, but stress being one of the major causes. Now, there's good stress and bad stress. We need a little bit of stress to motivate us, get up every morning, be successful, ambition, career, all of that stuff. What's bad is the chronic stress, when we wake up with stress and our stress levels are high throughout the day. So in very, very simple, in a simple way, when we're stressed, we produce cortisol. That's a stress hormone. It's good for us. It activates our sympathetic nervous system. We're in fight and flight. We can do things. Everything works for us. But that level has to come down, and we need to move back into parasympathetic, which is rest and digest. It's the system where we can eat our food, absorb it well, and sleep. But if we're constantly in sympathetic, which is the stress system, my digestion is affected, my absorption of minerals is affected, my sleep is affected, and I'm constantly stressed out. So my levels don't come back down again, which means my body can't repair, regrow, rejuvenate, and heal. So we need to be in sympathetic and parasympathetic. Most of us are in sympathetic. Stress is a huge cause. And if you really see, since the time
How does one battle stress?
It all comes down, it's a personal journey. You know, you can attend all the stress workshops across the world. It sounds great for the first 2-3 days. We all come back, make minor changes, and then we're back into our routine. It's something that we have to mindfully look at. You know, I always tell people, when it comes to stress, there are just two words that we have to master and really work with: acceptance and letting go. If right now you can think of all the problems you have in your life, and if you can tag accept, let go, that's no longer a problem. But at the same time, acceptance and letting go is the most difficult thing to do.
I take your point about acceptance and letting go, but a lot of people, for example, have chronic stress emerging from the fact that they're stuck in traffic for 3 hours every day. They can't do things that they want to do. How do you accept and let go something which is so integrated and a part of your everyday routine?
And that's our spiritual path. When I say spiritual part, I'm not talking religion. That's our decision. A lot of us today don't know what we want. You know, we're just following life. You know, we fitted into society, just expect, you know, accepting things the way they are. Now, if 3 hours of travel doesn't sit well with my life plan of looking at my health and looking at everything else, I still have a choice. Some people hold on to jobs which drain them. You know, emotionally, they have toxic relationships with their colleagues and bosses, but yet they stay there out of fear that they're not good enough for anything else, or they're going to lose something if they have to leave. So the journey is with ourselves. Every human being has a choice at the end of the day, everyone. I can choose 3 hours, this fits into my career plan, I need to reach that position, but I have to be responsible for the consequences. And there are some people who choose to give up, like we know so many people out of Harvard, IIT, who have given up their high-stress jobs at Wall Street, and they've come down to a life of farming today. And they're successful. It's a personal choice. So at the end of the day, we have to be so clear about what our goals are in life. I'm not talking about our work goals. That's different. What do we want to do as people? When I ask most people who come to me with stress, I say, what do you want in this life? Forget about being a CEO and everything else. That's your personal goal. But what do you truly want? And most people say, I just want to be happy. I want my health. I want to be peaceful. I want great relationships.
Well, I just want to touch upon the point with regards to cancer. We know the connection with diabetes and a bad diet and a bad lifestyle. But what exactly is the linkage with cancer as well as maybe your lifestyle?
Right. So very few cancers we can say are highly genetic, which are unexplainable. You know, children who are born with leukemias and blood cancers. But for most cancers, we're seeing a link of lifestyle. Now, when I say lifestyle, today a lot of people say, oh, the air is polluted, so people are getting lung cancer. The food is contaminated, so we're getting other cancers. But the question I ask people is, we're all breathing the same air, we're all eating the same food. All of us should have cancer. Mm. It's multifactorial. It plays a small role. Mm. But the stronger my immunity, the better I can deal with polluted air and contamination in food. Mm. We have to look at the emotional factor. We have to look at things like sleep. Mm. Something as simple as sleep is natural to the human body. When we sleep, there is magic that happens. We rejuvenate, we repair, our immune system grows stronger. Our immune system is identifying cells which are behaving abnormally, which are nothing but cancer cells, while we sleep. It's not happening during the day. Mm. So if I interrupt this process of sleep, I decrease my immunity. Mm. And you cannot have cancer in a body where the immunity is strong. Mm. Cancer happens in bodies where the immune system is compromised. So you could be the fittest person. You could look great, have a size zero figure, six pack, but you can still get cancer because it's dependent on your immunity, not how you look physically. Now, what impacts your immunity is your sleep. Now, if you have less sleep, the next day you have more stress. Mm. If you don't have enough of energy, your small problems become more magnified, which is why people with less sleep are usually snappy, frustrated. Mm. You know, they're constantly on caffeine, which means they're on this high, and when the high crashes, they're more irritated. So all because our sleep is interrupted. Sleep is like your battery. Your phone doesn't work if your battery's dead. The same thing with the human body.
So what is sleep deficit? And there are many people who accumulate a sleep deficit because they are hedge fund managers, they have to wake up America time, work India time. There's a lot of lifestyle related issues with regards to sleep. So what is an ideal amount of sleep for each person?
It's not amount, it's the quality of sleep.
Okay.
So a lot of people, I'll give you an example. Some people sleep 8 hours and they still wake up feeling tired. Some people sleep 5 to 6 hours, but deep quality sleep, and they wake up feeling energetic, ready to take on the day. Mm. The importance about sleep is the depth and quality of your sleep. Mm. How deeply you sleep. So for some people, 5 hours may be enough. And for some people, 8 hours may not be enough. So it's dependent again. It's how much of brain power and physical power I use during the day. That's how much of sleep my body's going to need to recover. Mm. If I did a really heavy workout in the gym, I will need more recovery time because my muscles will recover only while I sleep. Mm. So it's very different. It could vary day to day. But what is important is the cycle of sleep. So I understand there are people who sleep at different timings, you know, doctors, pilots, all of that stuff. But the way is to readjust your biological clock, to try to fix that time, whether it's 9 in the night, 10, 11, 12, or even 1 a.m., but try to sleep at the same time every day and wake up at the same time. Mm. So then your body recognizes its biological clock and can perform all of its functions. It performs all its functions according to the biological clock, not according to the timetables and schedules that we make in our lives.
But what about people who just cannot sleep? You can see that more in older people as you progress in age. You have, you just can't sleep. You depend on sleeping pills, etc. So for those kind of people, what does one do?
Again, it's lifestyle. We need to find out why you can't sleep. Most people can't sleep today is because of bright light. The moment the sun sets, there's a reason that the sun sets. Once the sun sets, why do we start feeling sleepy naturally? We're supposed to, because when there's darkness, we start producing melatonin. Melatonin is what puts us to sleep. But the moment the sun sets, we put on all the brightest lights, and then we have our iPhones and our iPads and these screens, which shut off melatonin production. So you cannot sleep. And if you look at the elderly generation today, they're spending more time on Netflix, more time on the phone, which is understandable. I'm not saying we need to stop this, but stop it 1 hour before bed. You need to cut yourself off from bright light at least an hour before bed so that your body can naturally produce melatonin. Because if people think that the sleeping pills are giving them, you know, sleep, you can't measure that kind of quality and compare it to natural sleep. And every medication has a side effect, including sleeping pills.
Of course.
So I think as humans, we need to understand that we can still watch Netflix, we can still have phones and iPads, but we need to put in a discipline in our life. 1 hour before bedtime, you cut away from your gadgets. You got to disconnect your mind from the day in order to fall asleep.
What about diet? We've discussed sleep now, but what should one be eating and not eating?
Okay, so when it comes to diet, the simple question I ask people is, from the time you stop breastfeeding, okay, till the time you grew up into a young teenager, the food that your parents fed you, if you were absolutely healthy during that time and you everything was good, that is your diet today. Because that food is information to your genes. It is in your DNA. That food grew you from a little infant to a complete adult. It completed the growth of your brain, your liver, your entire musculoskeletal system. It's in your genes. So that is the food that we should be eating today. Now, if we move completely away from that, which is why you try to take a South Indian staple diet away from them, what happens to them? They're unhappy. You try to tell a Maharashtrian to start eating like, you know, an Italian. They're unhappy. Because it's in our genes. Everything is psychological with an emotional connection in the human body. But you give someone the food that they grew up on, which they really liked, and they immediately have this emotional connect with it because it's in our genes. So the first thing is we've strayed away from our staple diets. We've replaced our staple foods with everything which is Western, which I'm not saying is bad. Having Italian once in a way is fine, but people are making it their staple diet. There's pasta every day, which is not staple to our genes. So the whole idea is creating a diet that suits yourself. You know,
but
your body.
There are so many fad diets. I mean, I can't even begin the list in terms of fad diets. Keto obviously would be top of mind. And then you have the vegan diets. You're cutting out huge food groups in your diet.
Right.
Is that healthy?
Absolutely not. Now, see, I respect vegans when it comes to animals and whatever. But what I really don't like is when people make it like an extreme cult. And it's like, oh, I'm vegan, I'm whatever. I can make a statement right now that I see no change. In fact, a lot of our cancer patients are vegans. A lot of, you know, people say that, oh, you know, non-vegetarians are sicker and have more heart disease. And I don't see that. I see Jain vegetarians coming to us with heart disease and all of that stuff. So it's really not that. I'm yet to see that, oh, people who are eating more meat have more problems than vegetarians. I'm yet to see that. There is no connection.
Dairy?
Again, there's good dairy and bad dairy. About 80% of our samples of milk in the country are adulterated. We should not be drinking that milk. We should be supporting the farmers who are able to produce the Indian cow milk. You know, we should be able to support them. And that milk is a class A protein. You know, it's a protein that everyone needs. Now, if you're vegan and you don't respect, you know, I mean, you have that whole thing for animals and compassion, that's a different thing. That's your path, follow it. But for everyone else, it's a great food again, if it's the right quality.
But what about the keto diet or, you know, the different kinds of diets which are available? There's a carnivore diet, which is just meat-based, or Atkins, which is high on protein.
See, I mean, I'm completely against the keto diet. I'll tell you why, because I would say 80% of the patients who come to us are patients who have done keto diets and have messed up, put the weight back on. Now they're psychologically depressed because they went through keto, put it back on. They come to us with kidney problems. They come to us with low immunity. They come to us with hair fall. Again, I would use a keto diet for all of my brain tumor patients, my epileptic patients. You know, in Belgium, it's a medical diet. It can only be prescribed by doctors. So the whole thing is, I think, you know, we can discuss various fad diets, but what I want to talk about is the mentality of our people today. You know, everyone has this mentality of following someone who's doing something, not understanding that every human being is unique. Everyone is unique. What works for me doesn't have to work for you.
But how do you know your limitations then? Because you will see people who work 12 hours a day and then go running for 3 hours and then run the marathon and at one point in time probably collapse out of exhaustion.
Absolutely.
So how does one decide what is good for you in terms of food, what is good for you in terms of exercise, and is it one size fits all?
It's not. You have to know your goal. Most people don't want to know their goal. When you ask them their goal, oh, I just want to lose weight. Yeah, lose weight, and then what? Or just lose weight. Okay, or I want to run a marathon. So you want to run a marathon, are you willing to train like an athlete? Which means, are you going to eat and change your diet to support a sport? Running is not an exercise, it's a sport. Are you willing to rest more? Because that's what marathon runners do. Athletes, I'm not talking about the wannabe marathon runners. I'm talking about athletes. They eat, sleep and train. They eat, sleep and train. They don't have 9-to-5 jobs like that. They don't work shifts. Their job is to run, so they eat and train according to that. And they sleep that much. Most of the heart attacks that happen during the marathon is because of lack of sleep. It's because of people pushing themselves off. They get off a flight and all over social media, got off a flight from New York, running, and you know, all of that stuff. That's the most stupid thing to do. You get appreciation from people, and this is what I mean. Everyone has to own their mindset. You know, we've become so shallow in terms of wanting appreciation from everywhere else without and compromising our health. I can't tell you how many marathon runners are regular patients at physiotherapists. You know, but they don't show the world that part of it, the suffering that they're going through, because they just want that appreciation that, wow, I'm running.
That social media picture and the likes on
and
social
I think
media.
People have to understand that. Run if you want. I'm not against running. But are you doing it the right way? Are you willing to sacrifice? Are you willing to be disciplined? Hmm. People want to run and they want to binge drink on the weekend. I'm sorry, athletes don't do that. Hmm. You're no exception.
Luke, describe an ideal day in terms of a diet for somebody.
See, it's balance. I can't tell you what an ideal diet is. When I'm talking about the framework of a diet, you should have fruits, there should be vegetables, there should be nuts and seeds, there should be your lentils, and there should be, if you're of course non-vegetarian, you can have your share of chicken and fish or eggs. You have to have all of these groups in your plan. Like a keto diet doesn't allow you to eat fruits. Now fruits is where you get all of your digestive enzymes, your vitamins, your minerals, and you can't compare it to a supplement which will give you the same thing. Nature and artificial are two separately different things. So for anyone, the more hectic your life is, the more you have to eat, but the right food. Because if you're hectic, you need energy. What gives you energy? Food. The
and
right
what
amount
about
of sleep.
Sugar?
So sugar is detrimental to our health. Of course, a little bit is not going to cause a problem. You have it in your chai, you have a dessert once in a way. But if you look, it's the overconsumption of sugar that's causing a problem today. And it has its link to every disease, again, through inflammation. But now if you look at intermittent fasting today, now I don't call that a fad diet. I call that the way forward. I call that the new religion of people eating. And there's a science behind it. If you go back to evolution, as the sun set, people stopped eating.
Sure.
They stopped even drinking water. Why? You don't have light anymore. So how would they use the time between that and sleep time? Socializing, talking, community groups, rituals, prayers, singing, dancing, and they would sleep because there was nothing else to do. There was no Netflix, Facebook, none of that. Now, when they woke up in the morning, they didn't have breakfast ready. There was no fridges. There wasn't a way to store and preserve food like we had. So they had to go and search for their food. That's the hunters and gatherers. So they woke up, and by the time they found their first meal, which is berries or fruits or killed an animal, it was probably midday, which means our system can automatically fast from sunset to a little after sunrise. Now that becomes an intermittent fast. And that respects two principles of the human body, the building phase and the elimination phase. So the fasting phase is the elimination phase where you're not eating, so your body can use all that energy to heal you, repair you, put you into a deeper sleep, everything. And in the building phase, that's when the body starts asking for energy to rebuild. And that's the time you should eat. Now, people can make intermittent fasting into a fad by when they come into the building phase, they try to diet even then. Now, that doesn't make sense. Building means your cells are hungry for nutrition, and here you are trying to starve yourself. So you cripple your metabolic activity, and all of this, you know, falls completely apart.
But is intermittent fasting for everybody?
There is no diet that is for everyone. For some people, it will suit them. For some people, it doesn't, because again, they're unique. Someone who wakes up and has a lot of physical labor to do, okay, they will need food to eat. So again, it's different. We need to see, and you need to try to believe it. Today, we've got, I would say we've got like a million plus people all over the world who have made intermittent fasting a lifestyle. And many of them, some of them can't do it. They say, it just doesn't suit me. It's not for us. So they change it. They try to do something else. They try to be raw right up to lunch or just eat fruits right up to lunch. They're trying to see what suits them. And when they find their path, that becomes their diet. So when we call it a diet, I call it a lifestyle diet, because your food alone, you can have the best food, but if you don't have exercise, sleep, and your stress is too high, it doesn't really matter what you eat.
But there are different types of intermittent fasting. There's a dry fast, there's a wet fast.
There are just two fasts.
It's different.
It's very simple.
Intermittent. What it is. Yeah. The
intermittent
dry fast
fasting
and the wet fast.
Is with water. Yeah. Dry fasting is without water.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. Again, we want to use common sense. I wouldn't do a dry fast during peak summer or if I'm going to be out in the sun throughout the day. I'm going to dehydrate and cause more problems. But now it's winter. The weather's fantastic. I can stop drinking water at sunset and start drinking water at sunrise. Anyway, I'm sleeping about 7 to 8 hours. Plus, most of us start drinking water towards the night. And then we wake up to urinate. And we disturb our cycle of sleep. So technically, if we can all stop drinking water by sunset, of course,
but
unless you're on...
is that healthy? No water consumption?
Of course, the human body is designed that way. If you've drunk enough of water during the day. If you have. So it's all about balance. It's all about balance, because during your natural cycle of sleep, you're not supposed to wake up to eat or to drink. So the body can manage at that point. That's all we're trying to do, realign with nature. We're not trying to force ourselves. Another way people make intermittent and dry fasting a fad is they say, I'm doing 18 hours, I'm doing 21 hours, I'm doing 24. No, the idea is your body will tell you how much to do. If your body's finished its cleaning process and elimination process and it starts asking you for food, you eat. So for you, it could be 12 hours. For someone, it could be 18 hours. Someone, it could be 21. But everyone's asking, what's that magic number, 18, 19? I have no answer.
Are there any clinical studies to support intermittent fasting?
There are loads of them. There are medical studies. Fasting is being used as a way to heal even cancer. For terminal patients where the doctors just say, go home and die, there's nothing that you can do. And then people, doctors put them onto supervised fasts where they're using the own energy of the human body to heal them. Fasting is part of every religion. Every religion from Hinduism, Jainism, to Islam, to the Bible, talks about using fasting to rejuvenate the body and the mind. It's there. But again, you have to be fair to even science, because science is skewed as well. Science only studies things which are profitable. Like, look at yoga. No one's studying yoga, yet everyone knows the immense benefits, because you can't make money out of it. No one is studying oxygen and realizing how deficient we are in breathing. Like right now, observe, are we breathing to our full capacity? The answer is no. But there's no money to be made out of these things. So to set up a research lab and a whole institute to study things which can benefit benefit mankind at no cost, no one's interested in that.
Before we wrap up, I'm going to ask you about how much exercise is good for a person. What should one do in terms of an ideal exercise regime? I know it differs person to person, but what's the basic?
Okay, so I would like to change that word from exercise to movement.
Okay.
Even, you know, the reason why we say everyone's chasing 10,000 steps a day, there's no magic in 10,000, but it's a great benchmark. Because you can't do 10,000 steps even if you walk for 1 hour, you know, so, which means you have to be active for the rest of the day. A lot of people today do a 1 hour workout, but they're sedentary for the rest of the day. Practically useless. It's not really helping you that much. The idea is your body needs activity throughout the day. So how can you be active? So for people who don't, who cannot work out for 1 hour in a gym, even a half an hour walk is good for them. In the year 2016 to 2018, we pulled up data of 16,000 patients who lost weight and kept it off. Everyone can lose weight. It's about keeping it off. The first exercise that came up in our data was walking. The second was yoga. So something as simple as this, this doesn't make the other exercises bad. I'm just saying the simplest exercises can give you results for weight loss and to maintain your immunity and everything else. So now for very busy people, even a 10-minute workout, you know, you have these workouts like Tabata, which are 4-minute workouts. Even if you do that, it has an impact on your body. But our mindsets are fixed with 1 hour. So if I don't have 1 hour, I just don't do it. We can be active. I have people, we have sedentary people who come to us all the time. We say every half an hour, 1 hour, get up from your chair. You can just do 5 squats and sit down again. You're not going to break up into a sweat, but you're keeping yourself active. You can even break up your workout into 10 minutes. I can walk 10 minutes in the morning, 10 in the afternoon, 10 in the evening. That is still movement for the human body. So whatever suits you. For some people, they love to dance. It makes them happy. It's also great exercise. Never do an exercise that you don't enjoy doing. It'll never work for you.
And it won't probably be sustainable at all.
Exactly. Select something that you love. Some people just dance. Some people do Pilates. Some people just do yoga. I know people who just do yoga and walk, and they are fit. Okay. In body and mind.
Give us a sense in terms of what your key philosophy towards health and nutrition is, and what would you recommend in terms of the ideal thing to follow?
So in our platform of holistic health, we look at 4 verticals. Balanced nutrition. I say balance because the body needs balance. You can't do extremes and deprive your body. So whatever your diet is, make sure that you're getting fruits, nuts, seeds, vegetables, lentils, everything that's growing locally. Nature's giving it to you at that time because there's a reason, you know, it's growing it. It's for your own health. It's for your own immune system. Never overeat. My chief rules when it comes to nutrition is chew your food and don't overeat, even if it's a salad, because your body doesn't know what to do with the excess salad. It'll store it as fat. Our second vertical is adequate exercise. I say adequate because you shouldn't overtrain and you shouldn't undertrain. Even movement, you know, we have so many moms who are fit only doing household work. They don't do anything else. The idea is activity and movement. You know, you don't have to make it fancy and complicated and choose fad exercise programs. Whatever suits your body, if it's working for you, you feel good, you're losing weight, that's the kind of workout that you do. The third vertical is your sleep. This is the most important vertical. If you get good sleep, everything changes. You're motivated to work out, you make the right food choices, your sleep is affected, your stress levels are higher, you move more towards sugary snacks and caffeine and all of that stuff, and your immune system gets regenerated when you sleep. So that's the most important vertical. And the fourth is your stress. Everyone has stress, but the difference is how we take it. Some people they take it in their stride. Some people, they allow it to emotionally affect them. It stays deeply rooted in them, and that causes disease. So it's a mind-body kind of a thing. You can't just work on the physical self and ignore the mental and emotional self. You can't just work on the mental and emotional self and ignore the physical self. So you look at physical, spiritual, intellectual, mental, and emotional. All of us are made up of this. And you just try to grow a little bit in each of these every day. Don't do anything extreme. You know, if you can't get all your meals right, get one meal right for a week. Then get the second, then get the third. Try different things that suit your body, not what the world is doing. Find out what suits your body and start making lifestyle changes. No one needs to diet. They need to make the right lifestyle choices.
Health and wellness kind of attitude.
Absolutely. It's everything together. Today, I can eat a dessert, but I eat it with joy and happiness because I truly want it. My body's going to break it down. But if I look at a dessert and I say, oh no, I shouldn't be doing this, I'm eating it with guilt, oh no, now I'll have to work out after this, I create cortisol. What does cortisol tell my body to do? Store fat.
Sure.
It's as simple as, so it's mind and body
okay.
together.
All right, Luke, on that note, I'm going to thank you. Thanks very much for joining
thank
in
you.
And best of luck with your latest book as well, which is focused on intermittent fasting. Thanks very much.
Thank you.